So a lot of people ask me all the time, how is it that you do what you do being in your 40s? Well, it's a lot of hard work, but honestly, I got a lot of help. I've been going to Triple Threat Performance for my physical therapy needs for a few years now. I keep tearing this body down and they keep putting me back together again. And just recently, I joined their strength and conditioning program. And really, honestly, I don't think the mountains stand the chance this year. I feel stronger. I feel more flexible. I feel like I could go longer than I've ever had before in the past. So if you are in the Phoenix area and this sounds like something you might need or you want to up your game, check out Triple Threat Performance. That's ttpaz.com. ttpaz.com. Hey, I also want to give props to the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. You heard me say it a million times. They're a game changer. And I'm not just saying it's not just lip service. They really are. They do what they're intended to do. And that is make a guy, woolly mammoth like myself, sound like a cat coming through the woods. And really just they're game changers. I think everybody should own a pair. It should be in your arsenal of weapons. And there is no other comparison out there. They're easy to put on, lightweight, easy to carry around with you. Don't take up a whole lot of weight and room in your backpack. It's almost foolish not to own a pair. So go check them out, Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Triple Threat Performance and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today we're going to do a little campfire session, a little storytelling session with Muley Slayer, Mark Schmidt.
So, hey, John.
What's going on, man?
Hey, man. I'm just glad to be here, buddy. If I ain't hunting, I want to be talking about hunting. So caught me on my lunch break, and this is perfect. Perfect timing.
Nice. Nice. So we were just before I hit the record button, I should have hit it a little bit earlier. We were talking about some of the stuff that we got coming up and some of the stuff that we're hoping to get here in the next couple of years and as far as tags and whatnot.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm sworn to secrecy on mine, so I'm glad you didn't say anything because I'm going along with my buddies. So you know how it is.
Yeah.
But some of that other opportunity we were talking about sounded really juicy, man. Really good.
Yeah. We got to get you out here in that Arizona, man. I know you told me one time you still get to touch fur.
I'm telling you, man, this is my nemesis. It's my Achilles heel. You know that I got the javelina, but I'd be happy with a nice, you know, coos deer, but a desert muley, man, a big old floppy eared, long, lean, gray. Arizona true desert muley buck is like, man, I have tried and tried and tried, and I just could have shot some little ones. I think, you know how that goes.
Sure
I could have shot them, but I've always missed or hit limbs, or it's just like they got a force field around them. So before I die, man, we'll make it happen. I still want to get my slam of deer too. You know, I want to stick a blacktail. I've got three of them or two of them. I got whitetails and mule deer. I still need to get a blacktail, a Sitka, and a coos deer. So maybe me and you can get at least the coos deer done someday.
There you go. I know the desert muley's out here pretty good. I mean, it depends on how big you want to get. I mean, but if you're looking for a 160 or better, I could definitely hook you up with that.
Yeah, well, you know man. As long as you're mature, I don't care.
We could find a good mature buck.
That's what I want. If he's a 5-year-old 2-point, man.
Yeah.
You know, big old heavy, just a heavy mature deer, you know, is what I'm looking for. So that'd be awesome.
It's funny how we all have like our nemesis. Like for me as California, I cannot shoot a freaking blacktail in California to save my damn life.
Oh,
like,
really?
It's 5 years in a row. 5 years in a row now I've been going, and 5 years
you
in a
just
row,
went, right? Like you just yeah, went with Charles like a week or two ago or something.
Yeah, I just got back. It was what was it? I don't even remember what dates I was there.
But you did get a constellation hog, I saw, right?
I did last pig. Last night. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
See,
there's nothing wrong with
that
pigs,
was the
man.
first time I even bought a pig tag. Every year I went, I was like, you know, I'm not messing with pigs, man.
You got to buy a pig tag in California?
$77
For one pig?
for one pig. It's like 14 if you're a resident, but 77 for out of
Wow.
state. I was like, ah, but I never wanted to buy one because I was like, I don't want to waste time. You know, if I see a group of pigs and I see it, and this is what happened to me actually.
Yeah.
Real quick, tell you the quick story. So the it was my last evening there. I had the next morning to hunt if I wanted to. The last evening there, I was on my way stalking two bedded bucks. And on the way to them, I was probably about 150 yardish. Yeah, about 150 yards from those two bucks. I heard some pigs to my right in the tall grass, and I'm like, dude, there's pigs right here. I'm like, bird in the hand, go after the, you know, I'm like, you know, the whole hike up towards the, when I was making the whole stalk, it took me about 30 minutes to get to where I was, 35 minutes or so, hiking up. And I said to myself, if I run into pigs, I'm just going to shoot a freaking pig. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, I made up my mind, and sure as shit, I ran into pigs going up there. And
Yeah.
I shot when I snuck into like 14 or 15 yards, and I killed the pig. And then Charles went, we sent Charles after the two bucks, and he shot, but he didn't have time to change his slider,
Yeah.
and he hit the buck in no man's land.
Yeah.
Hit him real high. We didn't find any blood. It was terrible.
Yeah, and below the back, above back strap shot somewhere, a far
Yep.
back strap shot. Yeah, that's he's living. He'll be breeding does for no time.
Yep. So I have you on, talk about some stories. I'd like to hear one of your, maybe your pivotal moments, one of your teaching moment stories, or you know, something that kind of changed the way you hunt, maybe.
Yeah, you know what? You just triggered talking about that movable sight. You just triggered a memory I just had, and I don't know that anybody's going to learn anything from this, but you learn not to touch your buddy's sight quick. My friend Sean Dennison, been my friend since 1982. We bought our first bows together. We've been bow hunting together since 7th grade. And we've been to Canada, to Mexico together, man. It's where I kill all my big bucks in Kansas at his father-in-law's farm there, the whitetails. And we've hunted all over together. He was with me on my first mule deer hunt. But when I was living in New Mexico, he wanted an elk, and he still wants an elk really bad, man. I had this spot that had so many elk, man. It was some public land bordered by some cropland, a lot of wheat fields, alfalfa fields. And I had kind of exclusive rights. The guy was just the wheat farmer, knew a friend of a friend type thing. I owed a favor as a barter deal. I owed a favor to a guy, and this guy, the farmer, owed this guy a favor. And so we all traded each other's favors, and it turned out it was a beautiful place for me to bow hunt. And it was awesome. It was just like looked like the Gila where I was at. It was all PJ and just rolling hills up against
Oh,
alfalfa
nice.
fields. And then it was the national forest wasn't too far away. So kind of had this place all to myself. And I had killed my first archery bull. It was 20 years ago, 1998. Yeah, I killed my first archery bull there, and then I killed my second archery bull there in 1999. So it was in 1999. Sean came out. I said, "I got the spot. You're gonna get an elk, man. I'll get you one, no problem. Come on out. I'll help you get one." So Sean comes out, and I had killed a nice 5x6 like 2 days before Sean got there. So I was simply just going to be the caller,
Right.
the guide, if you
The
will. But
guide,
the guide. But
yeah.
I was just going with my buddy, man. You know, I had a deer tag in my pocket, and there were a lot of deer on that place too. And Sean, elk are Sean's nemesis, because he spent a lot of money going out of state with me hunting elk over the years, and he still doesn't have one. But anyway, this one particular morning, man, where I can see all these cows out on this bench, and I can see this big rack, man. This is a nice, real heavy, whale-tailed 5-point bull chasing these cows around out in the oak brush down below us. And they were going to come out on this bench about 45 yards away. And back then, me and Sean were shooting old PSE. I was already shooting Hoyt by then. I think Sean was still shooting an old PSE or a Carroll Intruder or something like that. And this with an overdraw and 22-13s and trying to go fast, trying to break 300 feet per second, 80 pounds with 22-13s that were like long as a, 18 inches long. It was ridiculous. And
Jesus.
this bull is gonna come out on the bench, and John sets his sight master. Back then, that plastic sight master with a little scope crosshair in it, that's the sights he and I both were shooting back in the day. And he had it set for 45 yards, and the bull went out on that bench and then turned around and ran, and it was sort of coming toward us. And the bull, I can see his legs coming in the oak brush to our left, and he's just coming. He just does the whole primos, lays his head back, screams. You can smell his breath bugling right to our
Oh,
left, and he's
Jesus.
walking, and he's going to be about 12 yards. And when he steps into this one opening at 12 yards, it's going to be broadside. It's going to be the most beautiful, epic thing you've ever seen in your life. And I'm just back there lightly cow calling, just with a little ivory plate, just this bull's coming, man. Sean's at full draw, and he goes, "My sight, I don't know where to hold. My sight's still on 45 yards." And the bull's at 18 yards and closing, coming in. My buddy's at full draw. Well, my sight master, I had my dead stop set in the bottom. So if you push it all the way down, it bottoms out at 20 yards. Okay? You have a little thing, so you can set that where you want it. So, well, I bottom Sean's sight out, and this bull stops broadside 12 yards. Broadside bugling. John shoots, and the arrow goes like a foot under the elk.
Oh,
I
shit.
said, "What'd you do?" Like, almost like on Tommy Boy, "What'd you do? It's my fault." I said, "What'd you do, man?" He goes, he looks down, he goes, and Sean's just kind of one of these funny guys, he goes, "You bastard. Why'd you set my sight so low?" Well, he don't have a 20-yard dead stop. I bottomed it out, so his freaking housing's clear at the top of his sight. Sighted in for
Oh.
like point blank range. So yeah, I screwed that up. So don't ever touch your buddy's sight. I didn't shoot. I should have just said, just aim at his belly. With a 40-yard pin, just aim at his belly. He'd have killed him. But I bottomed it out, and he held low in the heart, got a foot under the elk. So.
Yeah, shit. At 12 yards, even at 45, I think the
Yeah, he
arrow's
should have just.
still on its way up. He
We
probably
were like,
would have hit low no matter what. I mean,
yeah,
he
we
would
were
have probably,
20,
yeah. I mean,
20, we were 28, 29 years old. It was just one of those things, man, where we
crazy.
learned the lesson. But he and later in that hunt, another on that same hunt, he and I are walking up the edge of this big wheat field about 8 in the morning. The sun's coming up over to the east, and we're walking east to go around this big patch of cedars. And I just put my hand up, to see where I'm going, because the sun was blaring right in our face. And I put my hand up, and there's this bull standing there, broadside, looking at this big 6-point bull. And I stopped Sean. I said, "John, there's a bull right there." And I had to hold my, I took my ball cap off, and I held it up in front of Sean's eyes so he could see it. And he goes, "Oh, crap." So I ranged it. I had a big old Bushnell rangefinder giant thing. I rangefinded him at like, I think he was 55 yards. And so Sean drew back, and he couldn't even see the elk or his sights or anything, looking right into the sun. So I held my hat up like at a 3D tournament, I held my hat up to block the sun, and he's like, "Yeah, I got him." And he shoots, and right when he shoots at 55 yards, the bull kind of turns and he hits him way back. And we go up there, we follow blood for a little ways, and as we're stepping out into this little sage patch, just through the little sage flat just behind those cedars, there's this big chuckle. Big old, chuckling bull. And I look, and here come one of the biggest palmated 7x7s I've ever seen. It's like a 350 class bull, just walks out broadside 35 yards, bugling, walking. And Sean looks at me, and I was like, man, we're on a blood trail of a nice 6-point. We can't really shoot another one, is what I'm thinking. And kind of like the last time I talked to you, one of these stories where we just made a decision, man. And we never found that bull. Oh, actually, we saw him later, and he hit him high, and like you said, kind of a backstrap hit. So hindsight being what it is, man, he could have, it wasn't the right thing to do because we had blood and we weren't verified, so he shouldn't have. But that's just the way the Lord works sometimes, man. He'll, or not the Lord, the devil, he'll tempt you. We had blood on an arrow, and we're chasing one, and here comes this big 7x7 on the same hunt. And then on one other one, he was on his knees, and I called a 4-point bull into this pond. The bull runs up, stops 4x4, perfectly legal, facing him at 18 yards. And Sean Schutz. He was kind of down on one knee, and his bottom cam hit his knee and bounced the arrow up, and
Oh,
he never got one.
jeez.
But Sean's a really good tournament shooter, and he's an absolute giant whitetail killer. And he's just a good all-around hunter in person. But man, elk have been his nemesis, like
Yeah.
nemesis. So that I don't touch your buddy's sight. Let your buddy figure it
Yeah.
out.
Man, I don't like movable sights. I gotta, I've seen over the years and had conversations with friends, just it's always the same thing. Oh yeah, man, I had this buck came in and he was at 80 yards, so I adjusted my sight and then the shot wasn't good and I chased after him and I caught up to him and I got to 50 yards and I shot and I shot over his back because I never readjusted my, just like shit like that just happens a lot with those.
It
A
does.
lot.
I use a slider that's got pins. It's got
Yeah.
five pins and 20 through 60, and that's my, I leave it locked so I can shoot 20 through 60 all the time. But should I have to dial in and shoot past that for a finishing shot, or if I'm antelope hunting or something like that, and I want to shoot 70 or 80 yards,
Right.
I just dial it down. That 70, the 60 yard pin becomes my floater. It just,
Right,
the whole
exactly.
housing moves down. And I like that option. That's worked really well for me. It's a CBE sight, and I've been using those
Yeah.
for a long, long time. But for years, I just used old Spot Hog, seven deadly pins, and that was, and back then I was shooting fast enough bows that I'd make the 20 my 30 yard pin, because 30 was flat enough to shoot at 20. And so I'd shoot, sight them in from 30 to 90, just have
Yeah,
all the pins, and all these pins. But what do you shoot for sight? What do you actually shoot?
I believe it or not, and I shoot that retina lock.
Retinal lock. Oh yeah.
The seven pin.
Yeah.
Where's my bow?
I've not seen one in person, but I've seen them on the internet.
It's just a 7 pin
Yeah,
micro adjust.
it's a
It's
good looking sight, man.
you know what it. The retina lock is kind of like a, I guess it kind of becomes a crutch, but for me, I just use it like as a verification, like, because when you're in the heat of the moment, you're usually manhandling the crap out of your bow. And I remember the very first time I put that sight on my bow, I was actually hunting in New York. And one of the bucks that I had been after when it was on my hit list, I went and I was sitting in a nor'easter, and those of you who know what a nor'easter is, it's basically a monsoon that happens on the East Coast. Gale force winds, rain, whatever. So I went and I sat all afternoon. I went and snuck into the stand about 1 o'clock, and I was just getting tossed around left and right like a freaking rag doll in the street. People thought I was crazy because it was like 50, 60 mile an hour winds. I was like, you're not gonna see a deer. I'm like, I don't know, man. I just got this feeling. I've hunted inclement weather before and had success. So I'm like, screw it, I'm gonna go. And I sat anyway, last light, this doe pops out, and I look over, I'm like, this is October, so I wasn't really expecting any rutting activity to be going on. This doe pops out and she's doing that little like I'm getting chased by a buck prance, like, swaying her ass around. And sure as shit, that buck puts right behind her in tow. She comes out below me. And so I drew back because I knew she stopped. She was gonna start taking off again. He was gonna stop exactly where she stopped to smell what was going on because she stopped. Sure as shit, he does that. He comes on, he stops in the same spot. And I had been at full draw already, and I just happened to look at the retina lock right before, and I was just freaking cranking on that bow, man, because I was just so amped about it, and plus swaying around and whatever. And I was like, oh, you know what? And I relaxed my hand and I made the shot, and he only went 20 yards. And I was like, and after that I was sold. At first I was like, I don't know about this thing. It's just another thing to look at. I got my bubble. I got this and that. But yeah, it's kind of nice to have like verification. And then it'll let
That
you
was
know too, like if your anchor point's off. And how many times you're in like a steep shot or whatever, just an awkward position, and you draw back. You don't know your anchor point. You feel like you're touching all the same spots, But
Right.
it'll let you know if you're off just a little bit, and I can adjust my shot. I'm not going to be able to adjust my anchor point or fix that, but
Right.
I just adjust the shot, you know,
You
if you,
get the sight picture right, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So
That's
I've grown to love it. There's a couple things about it that I wish it had. It doesn't have third axis adjustment, which kind of drives me nuts.
right, especially being a Western hunter up and downhill shots.
That I would say that's the biggest drawback to it. And I've had one or two of them where the retina lock moved on its own inside, and that cost me a big year once. But they've pulled all those ones off the shelves, if from what I understand. Matter of fact, I was just on the phone with them ordering myself another one for one of my new bows. But
Yeah.
yeah, I
I'm gonna check. I'm gonna, I, you know, I've not played with one of those in person, but I'd sure like to look at one of them
I like it,
too,
man.
though.
I like the housing of it, and I like the pins. Like, it's a completely encased pin, but it doesn't have a whole gob of metal. So,
Yeah.
you know, like, oh yeah, all right, we got you know, point whatever, 1.01 pins, or 0.01 or
Ten
point
thousandths,
ten
yeah.
thousandths or whatever. Super. But then they got this giant glob of metal, and it's like it doesn't make a difference.
Right, it's
This
still a
is
19,000 pin.
it's super super tight, like, and you
Yeah.
can really, really see. And I feel like it's made me, you know, a better shot.
Yeah,
So
cool.
that's why I stick with it. I'm not sponsored by them or anything, just in case anybody's wondering. I actually used to be
Yeah.
on that pro staff when it first came out, but I've let all that stuff go, and I just
Yeah.
stick with the things that I like. And
That's sometimes the best way to go, man.
yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, I just want to be a successful, better, and happy hunter. So the things that help me achieve that's what I stick with. So if you want to give me money, I'll take it, but
Yeah, and I'll use
I'm
it.
not doing it because you're giving me money. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, if you want to, that's fine, or give me products. But man, if I don't believe in it, I got to be able to send it back and tell you why, so that you can
Right.
make it better, or maybe it fits somebody else's needs. That's always a tough deal. You
Yeah.
know, being a, that's kind of, it doesn't really go hand in hand with what I'm going to tell you next, but I was thinking about a story that kind of changed me as a person, a hunting story changed me as a person. I like, you know, I think we all like to think we're good guys. I've always considered myself not a bad guy. You know, I've never intentionally screwed anybody out of anything ever, or taken anything that wasn't mine, or intentionally hurt anyone. But I think sometimes, I made dang sure I was first, right? Put me first, and especially being a hunter. And then when you become a sponsored hunter, not so much a celebrity, but sponsored hunter. You know, we
Right.
got bow brand giving you bows, and you got some good guys giving you arrows, and people giving you sights and arrows and things like that. It creates a certain amount of expectation that, in the big picture, if you go a season or two seasons with no feedback, no harvest, no pictures, nothing for them, they're not going to dump you if they're a good company. But their expectation is that when you do have a good kill or a good, you know, you have a great hunting experience, you can take some great photos of the product, usually propped up in front of a deer and elk or something that you're hunting. They want those photos for their marketing purposes. That's kind of the purpose of you being on their staff. You're a
Right.
two-way street. You know, hey, we'll give you stuff, but we need propaganda to sell more of those things. Well, I really got caught up in all of that in my 30s, my late 20s, early 30s, of being a sponsored shooter and shooting the pro circuit and 3Ds and stuff. And then at the end of the day, the goal was, no matter what, man, I gotta have a nice picture of a really nice animal on the ground with my Hoyt. And I never did the cheesy, got a bottle of spray and a backpack and a bow and all this. That's corny, right? But a nice presentable animal that you're perfectly, you know, adjusted, you know, you're sitting close enough to it to make it look real. Don't make it look big. Just a nice photo of the animal so that Hoyt could have it for their catalog, or Gold Tip, or CBE, or Scott, or whoever. They've all those folks have used my pictures, and I've always tried to make good photos. Well, the goal was to go hunting, have a great experience, put meat in my freezer, period, number one. Secondary was, man, I want to shoot a nice enough one to make it look good. Well, when I was 37, so about 10, 11 years ago, in 2007, I was on an elk hunt in Colorado, and the hunting was tough, man. And I wasn't as deep as I normally go, like backpacked into this big canyon I go into. I was kind of at the end of the canyon, not really a trailhead, but at the end of the road, and I had a camp set up there, and I wasn't wanting to commit and drop the whole 6 miles off into the canyon. I was going like a third of the way every day and hunting the benches up on top. Well, I was there the weekend of the muzzleloader. I found that my spot really heats up really good that second week of September, about when the muzzleloader starts. So I think after the second day of hunting, whatever, I heard this Jeep coming, this truck coming down the road that I was camped at the end of before daylight. And I'm like, oh man, I gotta get out in front of this guy. You know, I gotta beat this guy. I gotta get out there and get going, get in front of him and cut him off so I can find the elk before he does. And I did. I jumped up in haste, threw all my gear together, half cocked, and man, off I went, lacing boots as I run to get in front of this guy. Looking back, I must have looked like a real idiot, you know. I go out there and I hunt, and later that day, I'm circling back. I can hear the bugles. They're horrible bugles. Horrible bugles, this guy's bugling, and I circle out and I'm in these aspens and I'm coming back and I can see the guy. And he's old. He's a really old guy, you know, a senior citizen kind of old guy. And he's got two walking sticks and he's got a muzzleloader, his orange vest, and he hikes out and I kind of get behind him because I'm going back to camp too midday and I'm going and I'm following the guy and he's walking out and he goes down and he's parked, you know, 80 yards from me down the side of the road, maybe 60 yards. I threw my binos up and he had Missouri plates and he left. And I'm like, man, I was feeling like Cam Haines out running this dude down the mountain. Turns out he's 80. So I wasn't really doing much, but I felt good about myself. Right. So the next day, man, he does it again. And I thought, man, rather than beat him, I'm just going to I want to see who this dude is. And he comes up and he wasn't very talkative, but he was smiling. It was in the dark. He has walking sticks and man, he's cooking. This guy's flying, man. But he wasn't, I was trying to socialize with him because I was wanting to know kind of where he was going to go. Not so that I'd go where he was. I was wanting to go where he wasn't going to go. Because even though he was older, he was obviously in good shape and could get around the mountains pretty well. And so I was kind of like, man, he's kind of being a dick, but maybe he just doesn't want to talk this early or whatever. Maybe he saw me acting like an idiot yesterday, whatever. And I go off about on my way and he goes off hunting. Well, sometime that morning, I think this was on a Monday. Maybe this was the second or third day I saw him. It's hard to remember all the details, but it was a very impactful ending to this story. I'm down in these aspens, and we're not very far from the end of that road where we had parked. We're only in there about a quarter of a mile or so. And I was in there hunting, and I heard a bugle, a real bugle, a nice bugle down below me, and I started cow calling, and the bull started coming. And the old man started bugling at him, and then the bull really started bugling. And let's just triangulate. I'm on the far end of this clearing, kind of over in the aspen trees. And in the right upper corner of the meadow, this bull's coming across. He's fixing to cross me in bow range, but he's coming to the old man. And I'm like, man, if this is a 300 plus 6 point, I'm going to shoot this thing, you know. I mean, who's not? I'm on public land in the mountains, right? And the bull's coming, and the bull's coming, and he's walking past me, and the old man's still bugling. And I look, and it's a 5 point. It's like a 3-year-old 5 point bull. And I'm like, man, you know what? I'm thinking I'm just gonna watch this unfold, man. I'm just gonna watch this unfold. And you know what? I'm here for 8 or 9 more days. If this old man kills this elk, I'm gonna help him pack it out because he's gonna be on his own, you
Oh,
know?
yeah.
And we're only a quarter mile from the truck. So I just lay down, man. And I get behind this rock in the aspens. It's a big, you know, below an avalanche chute on the mountain, down in these aspens, there's a big boulder. And I kind of just lay beside it. And that bull bugles. And about the time he bugles, kaboom, man, that TC Hawken or whatever. It was a hammer gun. It was either a Hawken or a Renegade. I think it was a Renegade, a 54 caliber Renegade is what it was. That thing goes off, boom, big cloud of smoke just off, like, to my right, not very far, and that bull spins and runs out the end of that meadow and just starts circling and lays down and dies. I watched the whole thing happen. That
Nice.
guy was so happy, man. I get up and he shocked the crap out of him. He couldn't believe I was laying right there, and he almost like was going to chew me out. Like, you got to make yourself known, man. During this gun season, you need to wear orange. I said, no, man, I seen you. He goes, you saw me? I said, yeah, I saw you and I saw the elk. And I kind of wanted to watch you shoot it, man. And
Yeah.
he's like, oh, that guy's name is John, is all I remember. And he's from Chillicothe, Missouri. And he had been to Colorado 18 straight years, and that was his first elk.
Oh,
He had come
shit.
for eight 18 years, and
Wow.
that was his first elk. And I was like, I just felt so, I was so happy and honored to be a part of that. And I helped him cut it up. We packed it out, backpacked it out. He was going to call some friends of his that were in a cabin down the river. And I said, man, well, I'll help you, and we'll have this thing out by dark, man. And he carried the back straps and like a front shoulder, and of course, he wanted a skull mount, so I caped the head out and helped him put the horns and head on his thing. And I need to post. I took some selfies. That was before cell phones, and
Yeah.
so I took some pictures with my little digital camera. They weren't the best, but I should post one of those someday because it's very, very meaningful. But the thing was sometimes you got to get really good photos for your sponsors, and you got to take care of yourself. But sometimes, man, the blessing is really watching somebody else get to do something. And you know, how many more times was he going to come? How many
Yeah.
more times was that guy ever going to get to come to Colorado? I live there. I can go every day, every year, you know, and
Right,
he
right.
got that. So not to get too mushy, but man, it was a really wake up call for me. So when I'm in the woods, I have a different sense of awareness now, because I always feel like, man, there's a bigger picture. There could be a bigger picture going on right now on anything I'm doing, whether
Right.
where it's where I feel like I'm on public land. This is my spot. This is my camp spot, or sharing information. Just the whole way I approach the things that I used to, it's such a self-centered, selfish, because I want to do good for me and my people, that I didn't sometimes always look at big picture stuff that would
Right.
might impact other folks, you know, if that makes sense to you. So
Oh,
that
absolutely.
day, that hunt changed. I just grew up a little bit more that day, you know, like the Grinch, my heart grew two sizes bigger that day. But I
I
just was like,
just
ah,
had a
man, so
visual of that
I don't, is it really, I don't know how to tell that other than heartfelt, because it was heartfelt, you know. So I was happy for the guy. And we actually changed phone numbers, and we were, you know how you do, we're
Yeah.
gonna have this plan, I'll hunt with you next year and stuff. And
Right.
I lost contact with him and things like that. But it was a learning moment for sure, and it had a very happy ending. It was good,
That's cool,
shaped me
man.
up. So that was one of those stories that shape you, and it was a good story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I
Most
can.
hunting stories are good, so.
Hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right-hand corner, you'll see a green button that says "Become a Patron." Or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button, become a patron from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up the, clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. I'd like to add to that value by adding some bonus episodes that are going to be just for the patrons only. I'm going to release a few that are strictly for those of you who have contributed to the podcast. It really goes a long way, and I want to say it again that even a dollar a month, pledging a dollar a month, $12 a year, may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show. And I really appreciate it, and I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to this episode. I can relate to you, feeling the way you did. There's a lot of pressure when you get to a certain level to perform, and it makes you do stupid things. Makes you like desperate almost. And
It's pathetic.
desperate men do dumb shit.
Yes, they do.
Like I
And that's
noticed
what.
that on this last hunt in California. I took a freaking I took two wild shots, and because I was feeling that, like, there's it's kind of become like a comedy now, like, and people follow along with me on this hunt in on social media, and there's a lot of people rooting for me, but there's also a lot of people rooting against me too. And
Oh, man.
so like that pressure of wanting to actually get a
a blacktail, which I haven't got. You put this shit on you, like you feel like there's like you're doing it in front of an audience. I mean, in some ways I am,
Yeah. Oh,
but
absolutely.
and it just makes you do
Yeah.
dumb shit, man. Makes you do
Yeah,
dumb shit. And I know exactly the way you feel. Like I went for, well, I mean, when I had the TV show, when I had the show, I for 12 seasons, it was pressure. I felt pressure from the sponsors because I had some contracts where like you needed to kill X amount of things a year, or you're gonna lose your sponsorship. But it was also pressure from my wife. Like I'm going there for 7 days, but I really want to try to get it done in 4 days so I could get home earlier.
Yes,
You know,
I
there's
know that one too, man. Yep.
yeah, man. There's just like and that's kind of the only pressure I'm still kind of feeling right now. It was good for a while. But I just had another kid 2 years ago. Like my wife talked me into at 40 years old, I had a kid. I don't know how she did it, but I'm happy because now I have a son because
You old stallion, you.
I had two
Well,
daughters before that.
go,
Now I
man.
have a son too, so I'm happy about it. But
Cool. Oh, heck yeah, man.
now I'm back to like where we were, 10 years ago. when my girls were little, when my girls were babies, and now I feel like, oh shit, man. I can't be out here for 7 days.
Right. It's just
I
so
need
irresponsible, right? Like,
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
irresponsible. So selfish. Yeah. So
Exactly.
selfish. Well, I got grandkids. I'm in grandkid stage now. My wife. You know what's cool is I try to find some hunts now that my wife can go on with me because our kids are 30 and we're gonna have our 30th anniversary at the end of this month on the 27th. I married her when I was 18. My
Oh,
daughter
you
will
got
be
married
30 on
young.
her birth. Yeah, my daughter will be 30 on her birthday and prom baby.
Gotcha.
So she was a prom baby. Yeah, we got married pretty quick after high school, but that's okay. That's the love of my life, man. I love that woman. The ends of the earth, and we have two beautiful kids, and now we got five grandkids, and
Wow.
man, grandkids are the poop, man. That like just I already take my grandson hog hunting and fishing, and my granddaughter. I mean, everybody sees on Instagram, but I take them fishing down the bottoms there on my lease in East Texas, and they're going to be little outdoorsmen. But I don't. I tease when I say I would skip parenthood, go straight to grandparenthood, but that's not true. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
It's a cliche. My kids are amazing. They've been the best part of my life, but my grandkids are like just icing on that. So,
Yeah.
I have a hunt coming up. My first hunt of the year will be September 8th through the 16th, and I've planned it. I'm taking Boone, my little lap dog that goes everywhere with me. My wife and Boone are going because where I hunt, they can be there, in our
Nice.
camp and stuff. So I'm looking really forward to that. We're going to take our Jeep. We're just going to go up in the mountains there in New Mexico, and I'm going to hunt mule deer, and Boone's going to go, and my wife's going to go. So I'm really looking forward to that a lot. So,
Maria's gonna try to get out during that late archery hunt here,
yeah.
and we'll probably go chase some. We'll probably go chase some javelina around in February too with the bow.
Man, javelinas were made for family hunts, right? Wife and kids,
Yep.
you got slinging arrows. Oh my gosh, man, I love hunting that. I got one. I killed one with John Yokley up in Kingman.
Oh yeah,
Biggest
nice.
javelina I've ever killed. And that was, it took me two trips to get one. They're pretty sparse up there in that
Yeah.
northwest corner. But I got a real big boar over here in my office
Yeah, I
that I
see
look
him.
at every day. And man, I love that thing. Some people consider them like rodents, whatever, but I think they're big game. Man, they're
Oh,
awesome.
yeah.
I love hunting though. They're fun. They're just flat out fun, man.
Yeah.
And I finally got one and I'm proud, but I was thinking when I got that one, like, man, when my grandkids are old enough to pass hunter safety, they're all going to have little Hoyts, and we're going to, or recurves, or whatever they want. We're going to be out here flinging arrows at these things because
Yeah,
they're a
yeah.
lot funner because you can stalk them than like
Yeah.
our hogs in East Texas. You got to get in a tree stand or in a ground blind and wait for them just to come into the feeders and stuff. And you can set a long time and not see hogs, but
Yeah,
out
yeah.
there you can just run and gun, So I think you probably have a better population down your part of the state.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not like they're everywhere. They're not
Sure. Not invasive
overpopulated, but
species yet.
they're fun, man. It's everything about them's like you glass for them, you spot them just like coos deer or whatever or mule deer, and you put a stalk on them, and you don't necessarily put them to bed. That's about the only thing that's different, because once you put the bed, if you usually don't see them when they're bedded. I mean, they
No,
disappear.
no.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a great hunt.
Yeah.
They got really crappy eyesight, but their
Yeah.
hearing and their smell's really good.
Smells
So,
really
I
good.
mean, they're still formidable. They're not like a gimme by any chance. They're not super easy to
No,
dump.
I went twice before I got one. The first time I'd missed, I thought I was as cursed on javelinas as I was Arizona mule deer, but I just turns out I just sucked. I just sucked on it. Not really. But on this one here, I didn't suck, man. And John was guiding me. You know, he was right beside me, and I was expecting range, but we busted them and they ran out and they were just doing their little grunt and running around. But it wasn't exactly 20 yards. And I drew back and said, "How far do you think that is?" He goes, "I don't 30." I just put my 30 on him. Whack! It was 30. It was just having that somebody right there because you're in the heat of it. You know, I want to get one of these things. And he's like, "30." Put my then. Sure enough, it was like 31 yards. I shot him low in the heart. It was awesome. Well, I hit him low and he went off the canyon. And we turned into a whole rodeo down there. But we finally got down there and I got him. I climbed up in a little cave up in some rocks. He went in and I hit him low. It was gonna kill him, but man, it wasn't instant death. But he was in there popping and he had turned facing us and was popping us. And I had to back out of that little cave and I shot again and put him down. So it was a real adventure, man. It was really cool. And they're formidable when they're facing you, popping their teeth out.
Oh yeah, they're scary. They can be scary.
Yeah.
My buddy Shane and I last it wasn't last year, it was the year before. What was it? Yeah, okay, so it wasn't I said last year. So it was 2017 season. So it was technically last year, but February 2017. He had shot one with his recurve, and it went down to an old mine shaft.
Oh
And we
man.
went in after them. It was a
Yeah.
shit show. I got it on film. Remind me, I should send it to you. It was absolute shit show.
Horrible. Oh man. Yeah. But he got it. Did you fill it full of arrows? Did he
No,
get
he
it?
didn't. So we went
Oh
down there. He
man.
shoots down there, misses by a mile. I got the flashlight on it. He
Yeah.
misses by a mile. The thing comes flying out of there. About runs me over. Runs over. Willie Schmidt was with us from
Yeah, I know
Paranormal.
Willie. Willie's good people.
It was just, oh my God,
Oh
man.
man.
So we were bow hunting during the rifle season. That's what I like to go bow hunting for him, is during the rifle season.
Yeah, sure.
They're fun. I got a lot of fond memories of hunting
Funny
antler.
heavily. Yeah, I'll bet. That's just a pure straight up fun. You know. Not getting game, that's a touchy subject, you know, especially I think we've mentioned it twice on this podcast already about hitting them, and that's another lesson that can be taught, and it has to be taught because you don't it all comes with a little prudence and patience sometimes when you get an arrow on an animal. And that was one of the things I was going to talk to you about you know, no matter how long you've been hunting and no matter how good at it you are or you think you are, you're still room to learn. And
Oh,
man,
yeah.
2009 and 2008, I didn't get the tag. I had a really rough second choice hunt for high country mule deer, but in 2009 I got the tag I wanted in Colorado. And oh, somewhere around midweek of the first week of season or something, I was up above timberline, you know, above 11.5, somewhere about between 11.5 and 12,000 feet. I was just at the stunted spruce and willow patches, and I caught 3 bucks go to bed. One was a nice tall 4 point, very narrow, but very, very tall rack 4 point, really cool looking buck with 2 150 class 4 points. But the taller one, I don't think would have scored as much, but he was just so
So
neat, and
cool
he was
looking.
the really big deer. Yes, I'm gonna get that sucker, man. So I belly crawled and I crawled and I crawled. I had to cross this wide open nothing hillside forever, and just laying out there. And if you've hunted high country deer, you know you can just bake in the sun and
Oh yeah.
just inch along, lay down, inch along, lay down, inch along. Anyway, it took me like some ridiculously long amount of time to get within bow range, what I considered bow range of this thing. And I finally, there's one little bush. I don't know what the bush was. It was just some of that high country brush. It wasn't willows and it wasn't antelope bitter brush, but it looked like bitter brush. And I crawled up to it, and it was just high enough off the ground that it allowed me the opportunity to range, set up and range the deer and get a good range on him. He was 70 yards even. His rack, I could range his rack, and he was laying in the shade, but one side of his rack was in the sunlight, and I ranged it, and he was 70 yards on the money, and there was no more cover. And man, I was making that shot, you know, regularly, no problem. So I dial up my sight, 70 yards, and I just get ready and I wait and I wait and I wait. And I have learned a long time ago, I'm not going to go chunking rocks and making noise. Deer just blow out of their beds and go. They might work for some people, but that don't work for me. So I just waited him out. Finally, man, buck stood up, stretched, kind of was standing there looking around side to side. Seemed it's probably only 15 minutes after I got into position, but it seemed like all day. And since I already knew how far he was, I just reared back and put my pin on the middle of him, you know, kind of low and back a little bit. He wasn't completely broadside, but he wasn't quartering away. He just wasn't completely broadside. And I shot, and I was shooting a big cut on, or a big mechanical, I think an inch and a half, 3-blade mechanical broadhead. And I shot, and it hit him, and he did the mule kick, which told me maybe I hit him back or low. He mule kicked and he just ran over underneath this big spruce tree that was on the same bench he was on. He ran maybe 40 yards and then just stood under the spruce tree and just kind of hunkered up and just standing there. I got my binos up and he had a good hole in the right in the middle of his body and blood, you know, not spraying, but just trickling out of the hole. And I was like, man, that's a fatal hit right there. That's a good hit. I'm pretty excited about it. Just give him a minute, and he just kept standing there and standing there and standing there. And I've always been a firm believer: if they're still standing, you're still shooting. You know, you're going to
Oh,
get
yeah.
arrows and animals, especially with like elk. You know, you just something big. Just if they're on their feet, you keep shooting. Well, I believe there's a time for that. I truly do, but that instant was not the time for that because I was in the wide open. The deer had no idea where that arrow came from, and it hit him, and he ran over to just see what happened. And I should have just laid down flat and watched. That deer would have laid down under that tree and just expired.
Right.
He'd have died right there. But I was caught up in the moment. I had adrenaline, and I'm like, I just want to get one more arrow in him. And I just got up and I took a step. When that buck saw me, he took off like he was never even shot.
Oh, yeah.
And he took off running and he started stotting and then in the high country going downhill back into the timber, finally down there where there's the little tiny pine needles and stuff. And every time he'd bound, you know, he's gaining 20 yards every bound until he got into some rocky country. Then there was no blood trail, there's no nothing. And I never found him and I know he died and it bothered me. And that's not. That's just, man, have a little prudence, take some time. But since I knew, I went over there and got my arrow and it had some green on it, you know, it had green and blood. And I'm like, yeah, it was a little further back, liver, back of the liver hit and caught the punch because it was a big wide cut. You know, that deer, there's no doubt he's dead. And it was painful, but I pulled my tag out of my wallet, notched it. I looked all day. What happened was I looked all the rest of that day, went back to my camp. Got up the next morning, came back, looked for him some more, looked for crows, at least recover the rack or something. Never found a trace. Notched my tag, called it a hunt, went home. State says I can shoot one. I shot one. I went home. But
Man.
a little prudence on my part, and just a little bit of. And I was savvy. I knew better. I was 39 years old, been bowing since I was 13. I knew better. But I got caught up in the moment, even still. So anybody can get caught up in the moment. I guess my point of that thing is. If you make a good shot, and so now, to this day, I am more quiet after the shot than I was before the shot. And I've watched a lot of animals go down, you know. But I'm not going to fist pump you if we're ever hunting together, man. And I shoot, and I hit a deer with an arrow or a javelina or anything. We ain't doing nothing till that thing's out with his belly in the air flopping, man, tits up.
Oh yeah.
Because yeah, it's not a fun subject, but it is. That's a
No, it's part of
learning
it.
story.
It's part of it.
Yeah. You got one like that? I know you do, man. I
Oh
know you
yeah.
got one.
I got plenty, man. I
You don't have any weird,
got
heavy
plenty
stories,
like
buddy.
that.
Yeah.
I should say plenty. I've actually been fortunate enough that I haven't wounded a whole lot of animals.
Yeah.
When I make a bad shot, it's usually a really bad shot and I miss.
Yeah.
So
Gotcha.
I that's actually to me, I feel like that like that's fortunate. Like I haven't left a bunch out there, but I was actually whitetail hunting and this buck came and he comes underneath the stand and he goes between and I got two saplings that are probably They're probably about 2 feet apart, but because they're staggered a little bit like this and my angle, the window is probably only about a foot, right? And this buck comes and he stops right there. And he's quartering away hard, really hard. But I got one of those John Stallone's The Greatest Archer in the freaking world complexes every once in a while. It hits me.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I can fucking make this shot. I drew back. You know, I settled my 30-yard pin on him. I'm like, I'm gonna lace it right through here. All I had to do is wait for him to just step out a couple more feet past the damn saplings. But no, he was standing there. I'm like, I can make this shot. I go to shoot, and I hit him right in the ham. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But the arrow buries all the way in. So I'm like, you know, it's definitely in the guts too. You know, maybe that arrow is long enough. Maybe it's even touching liver. I don't know. So, and he ran around and kind of like what you said, he just like this buck just stops there and he's at 50 yards and I got a clear lane now at 50 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I'm going to put another arrow in it. But I wasn't like being quiet. I wasn't being like, oh, you know, let me just load another arrow. I was like fumbling and then being like, and he just caught me up there and he bolted. And I was like, oh, son of a gun, you know? And I never found that guy. I searched. I shot him. It was an afternoon hunt. It was pretty late in the evening already.
Yeah.
I searched for him for like 2 hours into the dark. And then I came back with my cousin the next morning. We searched. And I mean, this buck ran me through all the swamps they could possibly find in Long Island. And, man, I was pulling ticks off me. It was rotten. He got me back. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. He got
and
you.
I never
you
found him. I never found him.
That's so painful.
But I learned that day, like, you know, when you're hunting, you just always got to be hunting. Like, I actually have another story that kind of reminds me of that. Like, you know, kind of always I was stalking a coos deer buck that I was with my ex-girlfriend's cousin. And we weren't using radios. We were just using hand signals and stuff at the time. And, like, I had made this giant loop. Oh, I don't know. I must have dropped, like, I must have went, like, 200-300 yards, you know, to my right, dropped a couple hundred feet of elevation, down a wash, back up on the side to go back up around this buck. He was a buck and a doe, and they were bedded. And it was during the rut. And I went probably two ridges back behind him, so I would kind of line up with him and not make noise and whatnot. So I'm making my way to him, and I get to the top of the ridge that they're on. So they're just below me, but I haven't come to the edge yet. And I look over at Scott. I'm like, and I see him doing this like that.
Yeah. Like come to you.
Yeah. Come to me with two hands. And I'm thinking to myself, oh shit, the freaking deer busted. He's telling me to come back to him, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in my head, I was like, oh, you know what? I should just play this out. Let me just creep to the edge. I mean, that was just a fleeting thought for 1 second, but I'm like, ah, fuck it, man. There goes that stalk. You know, I just busted my butt. It took me, you know, over an hour to get over here. And when we spotted them, we were only like 200 yards from them. We were right across that's why I went to this giant loop to get the wind right and get, you know, whatever. But, so we were only like where he was sitting was only 200. So I start walking normal, you know, and boom, like a covey of quails, they come busting out from underneath me as soon as I get over to the edge. They weren't 30 yards down. If I would have just creeped, I had rock, like big rocks I could have walked to just to get to that edge. No, yeah. Instead I was like, doo, 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 doo. You know, it's just like kind of being in the moment and being quiet and just kind of always like when you're hunting, always being in hunt mode, like always. No matter what. Like those are the things that like stuck with me. Those are, I remember those two things like sticking out.
You know, one of my favorite programs on TV, I hear it every week when I watch it, is that Solo Hunter, the
Oh yeah,
Matthew
it's him.
show about all the self-film guys. No,
Oh yeah, the Matthew's Dominant Bucks or
yes,
whatever.
Matthew Dominant Bucks. And in their byline and in their opening thing, he says, from the minute you get out of the truck, you're in stealth mode. And you know, that just I kind of smile inside because that's something I think in my head. If I'm in the woods and there is possibility of chance of me getting the animal I'm after, I'm in stealth mode. You know, I find myself sitting around the campfire at night when you're in a big elk camp and I'm still whispering. People are like, "Why are you whispering?" I don't know, because I'm outside. I'm hunting. I don't talk loud.
I'm the
I
same
talk
way.
loud as all get out at work because I'm always around me. I can't hear good. And so people that can't hear good talk loud anyway, right? But man, if I'm in the woods, me and my wife, we'll be down at the deer lease. And I'll just stop and pee. You know, we're driving around drinking Dr. Pepper or whatever, and I got to pee, and she'll be talking to me, and I'll get out of the truck, and I'll be like, "Hey, like, why are you whispering?" "Because I'm in the woods." He goes, "Yeah, but you're not hunting." "No, I'm always hunting. Hogs could be over here somewhere." But yeah, it's that mindset. You are in stealth mode, and it's just ingrained in you all the time.
I'm always yelling at guys, like slamming the car door or slamming the truck door or whatever. That drives me insane. And they're like,
how
"Well,
you die."
They heard the truck pull up. You think they're going to be standing there? I'm like, I can't tell you how many times, especially with elk. Like you, because elk will just stand there and wait for a truck to drive by a lot of times. You know, so they just think the truck kept on going. They didn't, you know, they don't necessarily know that it stopped. And you got out. Like, I can remember when I learned this lesson. I want to say it was probably my first time elk hunting. I was with some friends. No, I was with my cousins and my uncle. So, yes, it was my first time hunting. My first time hunting elk. My Uncle Joe had drew a tag here, or a rifle tag. And we parked the truck. And we all got out. We got out quiet. So it, like, you know, everybody quiet and, you know, push the door closed, not slam it, make no noise. And, you know, got our gear on and we literally started walking. And we just got to the edge of the road and it dropped off to where we were going to go. And the elk were right there, like 75 to 100 yards. And my uncle shot a big 6-point bull, like a 320 bull.
Yeah.
Like literally. Now, had we been like slammed the car doors and, "All right, Billy, let's go down," you know,
yeah,
"get your bugle tube, let's go," you know,
"That's a bugle, just do it."
You know, those elk wouldn't have stayed there, you know, and I just
for sure, constantly. For sure, they'd have been gone.
Yeah, yeah,
that's hilarious, man. I love hunting stories because, you know, hunting stories, we're sitting here BS and having a good time, but there's somebody somewhere right now, come fall. They're going to go, "Oh man, Mark and John were talking about this. Hey, take it down a little bit." You know what I mean?
Well,
this
I
is
going to
be good.
That's the
I
point,
hope so
man.
Too,
that's
man.
The point of this podcast.
Gonna,
so that's why I like doing the stories, because you learn a lot from stories if you pay attention.
Yeah.
If you pay attention, you learn a lot. You listen to you get the nuances that you don't get from the how-to style, you know,
right.
topics.
Right, yeah.
You know, you get
stories.
You get the infield example, you know, and yeah, you know, he's got a bunch of really great stories. Rocky Jacobson, that guy.
Oh my God. He got,
I can listen to him tell.
Up. Yeah.
I can listen to him tell stories all day long. And they're always like outrageous.
He's a good storyteller.
Have you heard of, I don't know if you heard him on my podcast. Did you hear him tell a story about when he launched his Toyota, brand new Toyota Tacoma down the mountain?
No.
Him and his brother killed two bulls while his Toyota's rolling down the mountain. It was pretty comical story.
Oh my! I'll go back and listen to that. Yeah. I just see him every year at the show at the expo at his booth. I always go over and I use his calls, you know. And so I go over and I talk to him about his new calls or whatever. You know, "Let me tell you about the elk." And sometimes he's got video. Maybe somebody videoed for him. You know, "Let me tell you about this hunt I went on this year." And man, he's one of those guys that makes you feel like you are right there. You know, and it's just. Yeah. He's a good storyteller. Yeah. I love Rocky. Love Rocky.
Well, man. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got a chance to come on and share some stuff with us. And we did a podcast earlier today also with Randy Ulmer and Charles Whitman, and we were talking about some not so fun stuff. But I'm glad you stuck around to tell some stories.
That was a good conversation this morning. I have a feeling that's going to spark even more good stuff and probably some more controversy amongst your following and mine and Randy's and every and Charles, everybody. But there was some things that needed to be said, and I appreciate you inviting me to be a part of that, because there was some contrast, some major contrasting views in that. But in the end, they all came together as and with a good message. So I hope your listeners really get the good parts out of it and not pick on the BS too much.
Yeah, me too. We'll see.
Yeah. You never know. Well, we'll have another podcast about that then.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for coming on. I'll talk to you soon, and hopefully you come chase deer around with me in January or December or something.
I will, John. Thanks for having me. God bless and your family, and y'all take care.
Likewise.
All right, bye.
Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.